gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 11 of the Truly Schmitty Show. I am your host, Jacob H. Schmidt, and I'm also your executive producer for the evening. Tonight's episode, we are featuring one of my favorite tag teams in independent wrestling, two of my favorite people that I actually talk to. They are known as Michael Marvel and Kevin Cross, collectively known as Fatal Attraction. But before we get started with that, I just want to go ahead and mention this because it's something that I haven't been able to do yet. But I would like to just say to the friends and family of the late, great Dusty Rhodes, Virgin Runnels, rest in peace, my friend, and we're sorry for your loss. Also, a reason to celebrate in Chicago, 2015, Chicago Blackhawks have won the Stanley Cup Finals. That is something that we will talk about a little bit later. But before we get to any of that, I would like to welcome my guests, Michael Marvel, Kevin Cross. Welcome to the Truly Schmitty Show.
Feels good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Quite a lot. This is podcast number two for me this year.
Oh, I'm not popping your cherry? Dang. Oh, I thought I was doing that. Damn.
You always got Kevin here, though.
I lost count. I think it's my first one.
I'm glad you could count to one. So, again, thank you guys for coming in. Really, this show is really simple. Talk about whatever you want, whatever on your mind, whatever's on your chest. Go ahead and get it off. But I think what we'll start here with is that, you know, I don't know how long you guys have really been in, but when did you guys start your wrestling career? Where did you start at? If you guys want to go individually, then talk about how you got to become a tag team.
Well, we could just like go back and forth on telling this story because it's pretty much parallels because we got started together.
I feel like at this point, like we should have like a routine because so many people have we've had to answer the same question so many times. So it's like, oh, like he does this, and it's like, oh, it's like we're finishing each other's
sandwiches.
Yeah. I mean. The story hasn't changed. We've known each other literally forever, but we hadn't gotten into wrestling until 2011 was, I think, the year that we both started training during the summertime. And we both started at the same time, obviously, but we didn't get to have our debut matches at the same time due to like difficulties. Kevin's had a bad history of car trouble. That's hexed him beyond belief.
Yeah, it's still running strong or not running at all.
So it was kind of hard to get the tag team thing off the ground at, you know, off the bat at first. But once we eventually got around to it, I think we saw the progression that we made once we were able to, you know, work together on a regular basis and kind of put like the tag team that we've always wanted together finally.
Oh yeah. Yeah, just the guys we trained with too, because we were coming in like a little after Windy City was closing their doors. So I guess technically we weren't in Windy City, but I will always say, well, my contract read Windy City when I signed it.
And who signs contracts anymore nowadays?
I don't know, but that I got stiffed on my contracts. If I had a copy, I'd sue. But it was actually turned into a Dynasty Pro Wrestling with Larry. Well, Sam DeCero was the guy that we originally signed with to train by, but
which didn't happen.
Like he was like he was there a few times, but he usually assigned someone to do it.
He was right. There a few times. But when it came to him getting in the ring, he was barely able to show us how to do a headlock takeover. So it's like we were paying him directly, and he was having other people do the work that he was supposed to.
Sounds pretty familiar among a lot of what I hear about wrestling training.
I was going to say, I'm sure it's not the first time that's happened.
I guess the guys we would give direct credit to training us were Bailey Mannix and Shogun Chris Williams. Those two guys really trained us, and through them we met other friends of ours in the business. We met Damian Tyler, Marcelo Spade,
Carfu,
Sam.
To this day, I still don't know, yeah. know his last name.
I don't know. I don't know his real name.
<That's> Sam. Isn't that pretty sad about how, you know, you get to know all these guys and you never know their real names or.
Well, and you're supposed to introduce yourself on your real name. It's like you only give the first name. So yeah. like, if I have him on my phone, it's under like Sam Carfu. Yeah.
and like it should get to a certain point where it's like you would ask. Like I remember after like the longest time, like, all right, like I kind of don't want to call him Bailey Mannix anymore. I always knew he was Marcus. I'm like Marcus. What's yeah. your last name? And he's like Dornbus. I'm like
Bailey Mannix is better. Okay.
just call you Marcus.
Marcus.
Call you Dornbus.
Marcus Decimus Aurelius.
But yeah, like those two specifically, Chris and Marcus. I always like to accredit Chris Williams with giving us all the basic training that we needed. He taught us how to bump. He taught us how to run the ropes, tie up, chain, everything else. And Marcus. Next to a professional wrestling background, he also had a mixed martial arts background, so he was able to kind of teach us to give a little bit of more of a realistic aspect, you know.
Not to mention, he taught us how to conduct ourselves outside the ring, where you think would be a big, like, common sense thing to most trainers to teach their guys, but a lot of trainers just want your money and mm-hmm. teach you the basics and.
But he knew he wasn't getting that money. So.
Well, and that's from my personal experience. I've been along the same boat. There's companies I work for that their main focus get you in the door, get your money. They don't want to teach you how to work anywhere else. They kind of want you to stay in your locker room and stay in their comfort zone, so that way they don't have to share you with the rest of the world. But then they don't teach you all the things that you need to know, the nuances about working, how you work yourself in the locker room, how you treat other guys when you get to other places, and how to introduce yourself when you get to other places, because that's one thing that a lot of guys don't know. They go in there scared, looking like little lambs, and people feed on them in a hurry.
That, or some guys go in there with chips on their shoulders and just have no respect.
That's a big part of what's lacking in wrestling right now, and something that we hear. And in my opinion, I think it's something that comes from both ends. It comes from young guys that don't know how to treat, you know, work in the locker room, and from the vet guys that... Not all vet guys, but a lot of vet guys that feel that you could treat the young rookies any way you want and there's no repercussions.
Oh, that's definitely something I like to talk about, the way vets view the younger guys and how they pretty much like talk down to a lot of the younger guys. Not all vets, not by any means, but there are a lot of guys out there that just want to put you down like every chance they get. And it's just unnecessary, that kind of thing.
They think with like all the years that they've spent in the business, quote unquote, that they have like some entitlement to kind of like that's like it comes with that. It's like, oh, like I've been around for like 10, 15, 20 years, so I get to talk shit about you, you know.
Right.
And like, you know, you respect they've been in this game a lot longer than you, and you should value their like advice they want to give you, but. And I perfectly am like that too. I will listen to anyone's advice for me, whether or not I agree with their criticisms of my style, because you know wrestling is a very subjective, as far as like the variety goes. There's different styles you can do, and the wrestling's evolved way from what it has been. It's constantly getting faster and.
More detailed.
And I know the basics are always the same, work the crowd, tell a story. But then, like, when you work your style, the kind that you're comfortable with or what you like, then people want to tell you, oh, why are you doing that? Like, you don't need to do all that. It's like, well, you know, there's a lot of stuff I don't need to do, but if it gets a reaction from the crowd, then ultimately it's all about getting the reaction from them. And that's the most important thing. So a lot of vets might hate our matches, but at the end of the day, I'm not trying to impress you guys. I'm trying to give the audience a good time and at the same time have fun, because if you're not having fun, then you're not supposed to be doing this.
And that's one of the things that I see too. If you have the same match every match of the night, why are you going out there? If you want to do that, go have one match. Put out your main event match and don't have anybody else on the card. But the fact is, wrestling is a diverse entertainment. it should be different. Every match should be a little bit different. There shouldn't be anything that you're seeing twice in the same night. And that's what one of the things that's always bothered me too is where guys keep saying, oh, you're doing this, and you know, if you just simplified it and you do a headlock for 5 minutes, you could get the crowd reaction. Well, yeah, but if you do that all night, the crowd's eventually gonna get out of it and they're not gonna enjoy themselves.
You're gonna put them out. Your headlock's gonna be on the guy in the ring, but it's the audience you're putting to sleep for 10 minutes. Especially if they're seeing it like all night, every match. And this is an example that I always bring up. There's a show Mike and I did where we worked each other, and I think I told you before outside the podcast.
Is this New Age?
No, not New Age. Blitz. Where we were working a more progressive style, and one of the vets was criticizing it. Oh, like, you did too much. But then, like, some of his criticisms were like conflicting with others. He said, oh, you should play the heel, do that, do this. And then I was like, I did do that. Like, when it came to, like, say, like, some, for example, say it was just choking the guy in the rope or something. And it's like, yeah, what didn't you do? I'm like, okay, that, as opposed to, I should have done this, but apparently I did that. But that sounds confusing. But anyway, no, like he was saying, well, this crowd, they came to see a certain like type of wrestling. And like, so you don't need to do all that. Just give them that. Keep it simple. Do that. And that's great if that's what they came to see. But when you give them something they didn't know they were going to see, that's even better. Yeah. Not to mention when every other card or every other match on the card is what they came to see. Who stands out?
I remember that show. And if, apart from that, at first, when there's always the people that try to say, like, oh, like, you should have done this, you should have done that. And another big one is Bill from Fire Pro. And he's like, oh, like, he says, like, the same thing. But then, like, when he walks away, like, we're always saying to ourselves, like, I think we did kind of all right in that department. You know, he's like, oh, you need to work the crowd more. And I'm like, they were pretty hot for us up there. Like, that's the best I've heard them all night. And then for that Blitz show at the baseball field that you were just talking about, they went wild for just, like, the smallest things. I remember I did, like, a double axe handle off the top, and that was, like, you know,
oh, yeah.
They thought that they just saw someone do, like, 10 flips in a row or something, right. Dude, you know.
And, like, when I work heel, I don't even go to the sky that often. And I totally work the crowd as a heel. Granted, I'm sure I'm not the best heel, but I did okay. They were booing me as soon as I came out. And I found that guy in the crowd to where I just need to keep talking shit to him the whole time, and I was going to be fine. And, like, there was like, stuff that I was doing, too. Like, I remember you were going for your split-legged moonsault, and I moved out of the way, and I did that thing where I pointed my head, like, oh, I'm so much smarter than this guy. Like, I lured him in. He's a dumbass. Mm-hmm. But,
and it's, like, take into consideration that they're watching from, like, that like, picnic area. So it's, like, when they're not standing or sitting at ringside, they're not going to catch everything that you are, you know?
Well, that's...
And same thing in, like, if you're, like, watching on, like, TV, like, someone up front and close, like, front row seat is going to catch something that, you know, someone...
Right.
You know, across the floor isn't going to catch.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like, when I said, I found a guy that I kept going back to that whole match. I just kept talking shit to him. Like, I did something, like, I did that move where I bulldog you through the corner and kick your face up, and then I'd go up top. Right after I did that, like, I pointed to that guy. I was like, this is for you, and, or this is happening because of you, or something like that. This is your
you
fault.
You made this happen.
It's like, you think I wanted to do this?
Look what you made me do.
I killed my best friend. Does anybody know? That's like a Selena soundbite. I don't deserve to live.
Well, with that, I just want to remind everybody that you can listen to myself, the Truly Schmitty podcast. You can also listen to the Hot Pod and Thursday Night Thunder on HPN247.com and HPN.listen2myradio.com. You can follow me at Jacob_H_Schmidt on the Twitter. And you could also email me at trulyschmitty@gmail.com. And just as a reminder, tonight on the Truly Schmitty Show, this is episode 11. We're talking to Fatal Attraction, independent tag team, one of the hottest tag teams out there right now, in my opinion. And we've been talking just a little bit about what they've done in their career, kind of where they started. And it looks like we've caught one of their pet peeves talking about kind of the condescension and or hypocrisy of some of the vets and some of the things that a lot of guys are being told about the way they work in professional wrestling. So you guys were just talking about some stuff as far as working with the Pro Wrestling Blitz on a match that you guys did. Those seem like they would have been a lot of fun working at the minor league baseball fields. I want to check one of those out, but I'm sure those are a lot of fun.
Definitely. I don't know. I might not be welcome back there because I'm from ARW. So I don't know.
Well, as I mentioned before, like I did, with the exception of like just the, like I did the double axe handle, they went nuts. Like that was probably like they're a baseball crowd, you know?
Right.
It's not like, oh, we're putting on a wrestling show at a baseball field and there's no ball game, so wrestling fans come see our show. They're like baseball fans. So it's like we don't really know like what they are and aren't expecting to see. But for what they were, like they reacted pretty well to just about anything you would do out there.
And that's what I was kind of thinking. Those type of shows, when you don't get your normal smart mark wrestling fan, you could do a little bit more fun stuff and stuff that you don't necessarily have to do, you know, and not like you guys work like this, but where you have to do 1,000 flips and do all this stuff where, you know, even working semi-simple stuff, the crowd's going to seem to react a whole lot differently than your normal wrestling crowd would.
Well, it's kind of funny because, like, compared to how we first started, Mike has been kind of taking a more traditional approach to his style, and me, like, I don't do too many flips. It really just depends on who I'm working. But like, I try to do more of a technical style these days and more unorthodox stuff, like using the ring as a weapon, like neck breakers through the ropes and things like that. So I don't try to marginalize me as a high flyer. So like if somebody were to kind of just say, oh, that guy must be a high flyer, I'm like, well, I can fly, but I don't really do it too much. Like, I don't do any springboards, and I think the most I go up to the top is to, like, do a missile drop kick. That's about all I do.
Well, and that's one of the things I've seen from you that I saw that's been a lot different in wrestling for a smaller guy, is the fact that you're not one of those guys that runs around and does a whole bunch of stuff off the ropes, where almost every other small guy almost feels they have to do that to be able to get by. But I think with you being a little bit different, that's kind of showcases you as a different type of wrestler, where you're not pigeonholed into being somebody that has to do a million high spots to get his match over.
No, not at all, and I appreciate that. I just had a match with a friend of mine, Davey Attic, at Fire Pro this past Saturday. We only had 6 minutes. So
6 minutes?
Yeah, we had six. Yeah, and that was curtain to curtain. But... but he was already out there because it was one of those things where make a like impromptu match after another match, and I kind of like ran out, made a save, so like that 6 minutes was pretty much bell to bell because like we didn't have entrances. But and the way he works, he is one of those guys who likes the high. He is a high flyer. He likes doing some high spots, and I think the two best spots in the match. Actually, the two only actual spots in the match, I called them, and I was trying to just do something that would capitalize on the time we had, as well as compliment his style and, you know, working with me. So that was pretty much like a nonstop back and forth for the whole 6 minutes. We didn't do the whole traditional the good guy gets a shine, then it's the cutoff, heat, hope spot, and then come back and take it home kind of thing.
We didn't give away the business.
That we're okay. You shoot from the hip. We don't care here. We've broken down the fourth wall of wrestling already, so this is perfectly okay.
Wait a minute. This looks fake? No, it's not. It's predetermined.
It's staged.
It's staged. Because I'm an actor, and the ring is my stage. And I really am an actor. If you guys need some commercials,
just a drama nerd.
But
that was my college major.
Oh, yeah. Throwing out a little bit of shoot work there.
Well, I'm doing shows every weekend, so I think it worked out okay.
Shows at the theater?
I did a wrestling show in Chicago theater. Yeah.
It was a good time.
Well, you know, we've talked a little bit about what you guys have done working with each other, but the one thing I haven't mentioned yet is the fact that you guys are the Fire Pro Tag Team Champions, and you guys had a long-standing feud with the Wild Ones to be able to gain those belts. Tell me a little bit about that, a little bit of your backstory as a tag team, because... you know, the fans definitely like to hear about it, and I would like to actually know kind of the whole story.
Well, first off, we would have gladly brought the belts with us, but they are currently being refurbished and retouched up.
I wonder if they're done, because, like...
Probably not.
Yeah, because, like, no, because they were at the show, because I got them back, like, storyline-wise, because they took our titles. I got them back at the last show. And, like, there was stuff done to it, but I was like, I think there could be more done to these.
Because they were talking about just, like, getting, like, whole new custom belts, too. But, I mean, just back to the, you know, blatant question as it is. The Wild Ones has definitely been the best program in my career, if you want to call it a career. I wouldn't exactly call it that, but just throughout my wrestling entirety. I feel that our program with the Wild Ones is, by a long shot, my favorite thing that I or we have ever done.
Yeah, definitely favorite program. I don't think I've had a better program with anybody else.
Match-wise, I think the only match that I could say would surpass anything that we've really had with the Wild Ones, because everything we've done with them was just so, like, just the chemistry was there. Just us knowing them so well and vice versa was just my match with Kevin. But that was a given.
New Age.
Right. That match was fantastic. I got to do a little bit of commentary on that.
We had several people, including you and including Machine, just like come up to us and tell us that like it was just...
Yeah, I mean,
We opened too, didn't we?
Did
we
open? I think...
You were fairly close, you know, close to the front of the card, but I remember the overall reaction that you guys got that night, the crowd eating out of the palm of your hands, and just the fact that there, you know, even if you guys had mistakes in there, nobody could tell. You covered up if there were any botches in the match. Everything was covered up really well. There was a fluidity to it where you don't see with a lot of wrestling matches, especially. And I think that's, you know, a big part of doing the fact that you guys work together so much. You guys know each other. You train together. So I think that's probably a big reason why that match was as successful as it was.
Oh, yeah, thanks. No, for sure. I wish that whole match in its entirety was recorded. I know there was Brenda, one of the wrestling fans, and one of the fans and friends that recorded bits of it. And then another one of our friends recorded a small part on his phone of me getting out of the way. Mike takes he does a splash in the corner, hits his face on the post. And like as soon as he lands, I just hit him with a German suplex in like one fluid motion. And
which was beautiful.
Yeah. It was that whole match felt awesome. And I was over the moon about that particular match. That's by far my favorite match I've ever had. And I'm glad I get to have it with my best friend. And I told him, like, repetitively that night that, like, how great it was and how far along, like, both of us have come, like, since we started. And I was just so happy and proud to work on that night. And he did such a great job, especially compared to the one other match we had.
I was going to say, like, we talked about it before, after that New Age show at certain points, and just putting that match that we had at New Age in comparison with the baseball show for Blitz that we had, there's no competition, there's no contest even.
Right. Well, and that's, one of the things that probably helped out too is that you were in a more traditional wrestling scene, and it was something where it probably wasn't so much a throw off as maybe what you guys were getting at Blitz, where there might be a way with New Age where you go back and actually see something more of this happening. Because, and we'll get into a little bit more of this in the second half, we saw you this past Friday with New Age debut a new group at, with yourself. What is it?
The Wild Ones.
And was Cujo part of that too? Or was that just kind of
that's thing? It's actually a very, very interesting and awkward. favorite subject too at the same time, I'll admit. Because before I even came into the picture, before I knew Johnny and Richie, they had an idea for a group, and it was called Rock of Ages. And the idea for the group was to have, you know, just like a few members, you know, like them, probably like one other person. And they each kind of personify a different age of like rock and roll. Like they, like Johnny Motley, he's obviously and always the like 80s glam guy.
You know? Right.
And Richie would be like the grunge guy or whatever he is. I can't right. really
yeah,
tell.
I can't really
he
tell. He's it looks like he's got the grunge.
He just kind of
like,
wears whatever
yeah.
he wants. And like I would be, you know, like 60s, 70s, like rock and roll psychedelia.
Right.
And like I talked to them about it before, and I'm like, you know, I think this would actually be a pretty like neat idea, but instead of like Rock of Ages, because I don't think a lot of people would like flow with that. You know, there's the movie, there's the musical, there's like all the like Rock of Ages stuff already.
I just want to point out the movie is based off the musical. I just want to, for those who don't know.
Like again from the drama
yeah, the drama guys. Major that, you know. That well appreciated. See, that's insight that we wouldn't normally get.
And we've just had the idea for like years and just like talked about it. And the main concept and the idea behind Freak Out, which is the name of the group, is that we're a band. We have several members. We do everything a band does except for play music. We're wrestlers. We want to travel around. Richie's actually got like an old brown beat up VW bus that we can like go take trips in. We want to like have like our own merch stands. We want to have groupies that come out to the ring with us. We want to have like the cult following that like
show me
pertains
your tits.
Strictly to right. us. You know,
like show me your tits at a kid show.
And it was never able to take flight because. Longest time, Fire Pro was really the only promotion that they worked for, and
mm-hmm.
we worked for, and it was like that mainstay, and nobody else really wanted to do it. And we were able to kind of test the waters and blitz a little bit, and we had another buddy with us, and his name is Mike Drish, and he was going to be our manager, because he kind of dabbled in wrestling a little bit, and he's like, you know, it's not for me, I'd like to be a manager, though, and so if I can't book, I'd like to be a manager. And so we brought him to Blitz with us, and I told Larry and Todd, who are the bookers at Blitz, like, hey, this is the idea I've been telling you guys about. We'd like to try it out. We got our manager with us. And they're like, oh, okay, we'll get back to you in a little bit. We'll let you know what's going on. And they put Drish, our manager, who we wanted to be our manager, with the tag team that John and Rich ended up facing later that evening, which doesn't really fit because they fought the right. Midwest models. They fought Colin Cambridge and Nick Cutler. And so here you got like these two like prissy, clean shaven, like model gimmick characters.
Right.
Who are being brought to the ring by this scruffy. If you've never met Mike Drish, he looks exactly like Lemmy from Motorhead.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
So he's escorting like two like supposed male models out to the ring. And I'm like, this just isn't working. But their excuse was like, oh, he looks like a bad guy. He should be a bad guy. I'm like. Right. It just like kind of ruined
right.
the whole thing. And to think that like they wanted to bring me into Blitz to have a program with Jimmy Rockwell. I don't know if you know who that is.
I don't. But I'll tell you what, we're gonna go ahead, we're gonna finish this up in the second half of our episode number 12. Obviously we've still got a lot more to talk about, so make sure that you tune in for episode 12, which will be airing Thursday. And we'll be back with Kevin Cross and Michael Marvel, collectively known as Fatal Attraction. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you on Thursday.
Y'all ready for this?